This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I'm your big daddy, and I want to be referred to as such.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
It's not fair.
I'm an Andrew Gunling fan.
Just take the L.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's Andrew Gunling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
That's right. Andrew Gunling here, ENN 98.7 ESPN New York, on what is going to be a jam-packed ENN on what is one of the most surreal sports days that I can remember in recent memory. Peter, what's up? How are you?
It's in Pompano Beach.
I don't think that's how you say that word.
Nope.
And Chris Carlin, what's up? How are you?
That's a big, fat W-H-E-N, my friend.
Yeah. I remember that was yesterday. Or earlier today, Brad.
Like 8 minutes ago.
All right, let's get to it, because this is... there is... For a late August day, this is a time of year when there's not usually a ton happening in sports. This is usually kind of like baseball dog days, training camp, whatever. Sure. There is a lot happening today. We'll try to go through it here. The big story, of course, this is a landmark day in both NBA and really sports history. Surreal scenes from the bubble in Orlando. The Bucks and Magic were slated to play at 4:10 this afternoon. The Bucks never came out for warmups. They apparently decided prior to the game that they would be boycotting. The Magic were prepared to play. They were out on the court warming up. However, they would not accept the eventual forfeit, so the game is simply postponed. A couple comments here. We're tired of the killings and the injustice, Bucks guard George Hill told the undefeated's Mark Spears. And then also this from the Magic: today we stand united with the NBA office, the National Basketball Players Association, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the rest of the league, condemning bigotry, racial injustice, and the unwarranted use of violence by police against people of color. Also, both of tonight's game fives are going to be postponed, the Thunder Rockets, as well as the Blazers and Lakers. Guys, this is one of the most memorable sports days that I can remember, like I said at the top of the CNN.
Truly crazy. I'm impressed by the players. I'm also, you know, I'm simultaneously proud, impressed, and also bummed out. I mean, from a straight up basketball selfish standpoint, I'm very excited about this league right now and where we were going. We're really starting to see the cream kind of rise to the top. You're seeing the Bucks become the Bucks, the Lakers become the Lakers. Luka Doncic become a star. There's a lot of fun storylines in the NBA, but the bottom line is none of them are as important. And if people can't appreciate where these a lot of these players come from and what they and their families and loved ones have to deal with, then frankly we don't deserve to watch them play basketball. So I support the players, and I hope they come up with a plan here that works for them and that we, you know, all of us get to see some impact as a result.
Whenever you have a chance to affect change and you don't use it, I mean, you know, it's neglect. And the fact that the players have chosen to do this in such a spectacular fashion, I think is just so admirable. And I give them an awful lot of credit for doing it. And I, you know, it's going to bum me out when I read some of the people who think that it's not as altruistic as it looks, but to me it is. I think it is in every way. And when you get the chance to see real change hopefully get enacted through powerful statements of the people who, you know, have the hammer and can swing it when they get the chance, I think it's exceptionally important. So I give them a lot of credit for what they've done.
You guys read this tweet moments ago, but I think it's important enough that it bears repeating. This was from Woj about 15 minutes ago. He says in the tweet, "Emotions are raw. Players were already worn out of bubble environment prior to the Jacob Blake shooting. And sources say discussions within teams are ongoing about postponing tomorrow's three games too and beyond. The season is in jeopardy," one veteran player here tells ESPN. Here's more from Woj. He was on The Jump talking about the Bucks' decision to boycott.
At the arena today where the Bucks and Magic were about to play their game five, the Magic came out on the court. They warmed up like they normally would for a playoff game. The first horn sounded. The Bucks weren't out yet. I got wind that they were discussing a boycott, and Malika Andrews was there on the scene. She could see league officials moving into or outside the locker room area. I'm told that even at the highest levels of the Bucks organization, they weren't, it wasn't clear to them that this was going to happen. This, I'm told, was a player's decision. They made this decision to boycott this game, and what the ramifications are now for the Bucks. They were leading 3-1 in the series. And so, but this is a moment in time, a moment in history. We have never seen this in professional sports, certainly not the NBA.
This is now permeating from the NBA into other sports as well. You guys had just mentioned moments ago that the Milwaukee Brewers and Cincinnati Reds, their game is postponed tonight. Now this from Jeff Passan on Twitter. Following the cancellation of the Milwaukee Brewers and Cincinnati Reds game tonight, more teams are discussing the possibility of not playing, sources tell ESPN. Among those currently discussing it, the Seattle Mariners, who have the most black players of any team in Major League Baseball. So this story is only just beginning, it seems.
It's unfolding in front of us as we speak, Andrew.
It is. It truly is.
Or any second, as you speak.
Yep. And we'll keep our eyes open for it, of course. It's funny, there are a lot of other things happening in sports. It almost seems weird to talk about them, but I'll do that right now. There was a major New York sporting event this afternoon in the NHL playoffs, the Islanders and Flyers. It started terribly for the Islanders. It was 3-0 after one. The Isles chipped away. They chipped away. And then with 2:09 left in the third, they tied the game 3-3. Wow. They came all the way back, sent it to overtime. The Islanders, of course, leading the series 1-0. But 1 minute into the extra frame, this happened.
Now they play it back to Giroux in the right wing corner. Steps around Barzal, drops it behind the net for Voracek, or rather Couturier. Spun it to the net, loose in the crease, Grice the save, rebound Couturier, and somehow it got deflected over the net. Right point shot, Phil Myers, they score. Philadelphia wins it in overtime. 4-3 is your final. The Flyers have their first overtime win in 8 years, and they have evened this series at a game apiece.
Brutal for the Islanders after coming all the way back and then falling just short in overtime of what would have been a commanding 2-0 lead in the series. Now it's evened up 1-1, and back-to-back games, they're back at it again tomorrow night in the bubble in Toronto.
Damn it, I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Why do you have to be like that? Like,
yeah, well, what's wrong with
not,
you?
I mean, okay, we all understand, like, we get it. You're not a hockey guy, but to not allow yourself.
I'm not a hockey guy. I actually at one point was a big Islander fan. I just, you know, I how bad is it that I didn't even have the game on in front of me this afternoon? I turned on the game, knew that was on at 4:00. Threw over, I mean, it's NBA TV. I was there all day, obviously, because of the unfolding news.
I might even say you were bereft in your duties as a New York sports
talk
show.
You could say that. You could say that. Yet.
Wow.
Yet.
Wow.
You could say I was actually doing what I should be doing. Anyway.
Well, you mentioned the Yankees. You mentioned the Yankees and how you were.
Shane Couturier.
It's Sean, but
Sean,
whatever.
Sean, whatever. They only worked in the city for a year.
Let's see. You mentioned the Yankees. It's not going well for them. They were actually getting no hit through five today by Braves pitcher Ian Anderson. That is no longer the case. Luke Voit did snap that with a home run. However, last I checked, it's 5-1 Atlanta.
I am watching as we speak. 5-1 okay. Atlanta.
Why?
Yes. Not a great day for Yankees starting pitcher Gerrit Cole. 5-plus innings. 5 runs he's been credited with.
Oh, no.
9 strikeouts, gave up 3 home runs as well.
And I think Anderson, that might have been his major league debut.
I'd like to ask Aaron Boone an important question. Manager Boone, what the hell happened with Gerrit Cole today?
You know what? I don't know.
It's unfortunate.
I doubt we have the audio, but I was with regards to Gerrit Cole's start, I was actually going to go live to Joe Girardi for comment.
You know what? It's not what you want.
Well, it's not what you want.
What was funny, though, is that I did see when Boone came out to take him out of the game, and Cole tapped him on the shoulder, tossed him the ball. You got it, King. I'm done.
Yeah, yep.
There was no screaming and yelling today about coming out.
No.
It's not what you want to see.
Not what you want to see. This is a doubleheader, by the way. Game two of Yankees Braves will be shortly after this one ends. Masahiro Tanaka against Max Fried. Mets also in action tonight against the Marlins, 7-10. DeGrom on the mound for New York. Marlins won both games of yesterday's doubleheader without conceding a run, as a matter of fact. 4-0 and 3-0. More from Joe Girardi.
It's not what you want to see.
That's
no.
Right.
Yeah, they were 0-15 with runners in scoring position. I mean, they are mastering leaving runners on base. It's staggering how good they've been, because I think in every inning except one in the doubleheader, they had a runner on base and didn't score one run.
Unbelievable. Let's see. We go now to football, NFL training camp. We talked about this a little bit, but here's Joe Judge on taking the red jersey off Daniel Jones for some stretches.
Yeah, I got the strength staff downstairs when I'm putting bars of soap in socks, and we're just going to take them out back and just wail on them for a while. No, look, it's our responsibility to get every player, you know, ready to play. And, you know, with a quarterback, you've got to be smart about the contact. You know, we're putting them in a live tackling drill? No. Is it something you're going to bang around a little bit with a pad, of calculated time and pads, and make sure his body at least feels some pressure on it? Yes. Is there a time you're going to kind of bear hug him a little bit, let him feel the grass? Yeah, these are things you naturally have to do to get a player's body ready. Remember this, it's not just the physical conditioning. It's as important for the players to be contacted and be tackled to prepare for the game. You can't get yourself ready mentally to be hit full speed. Your body has to learn how to absorb that hit, has to learn how to adjust accordingly. You've got to learn the feeling again of going to the ground. That's just something natural. Now, we're not going to be foolish about what we do with any of our quarterbacks. We're not going to make them live in practice, but we may set up a drill here or there to let them feel a little bit of the stress they're going to feel within the pocket. All right, but making sure that we do it at the right tempo, that they're not going to be at risk of injury.
Okay, but here's my only, you're not going to go live in practice, that's fine. My only thing is, why is it we never hear about any other quarterback in training camp getting hit? We never hear that, especially any starting quarterback ever having to get ready for the year by getting hit some. I mean, do you think that they're taking any franchise quarterback and doing that? I don't think
so. Well, there's one difference, though. First of all, it remains to be seen if you'll hear about it this year, because the big difference is, you know, most starting quarterbacks around the league, you don't hear about them getting hit because it's a non-issue. They play in preseason football games. You know they're going to get hit. This year, there is no preseason football for them to ease their way into getting hit. So Joe Judge, and I imagine other coaches probably will follow suit, will try to simulate it in the safest, most controlled way that they can within their own practices. I don't know. I see zero wrong with this.
Let's get to the really important thing here. What happened? Why did you and Kay make this turn to just decide to be pro Judge? What happened?
Because I don't
especially
know.
No
one believed you. When you said you were coming around on Judge, RJ said, ha, ha, ha. You said, I'm serious. Then you said it today on our call with Ryan. Ryan goes, ha, ha, very funny. No one believes you. Are you being hired? Were you paid by the Giants?
It was one of those things where he's kind of doing it because he thinks Joe Judge is not going to be a good coach, and so I want to root him on and give him as much support as I can so he can keep that job and lose to the Eagles. So,
right, and they can be bad, lose to the Eagles.
So you think this is some kind of like Eagles reverse psychology that I'm working on, Joe?
Yeah, that's
right. I genuinely like don't have any problems with what he's done so far, and I'm kind of surprised that more New York fans and media don't feel the same. Like the Giants, you know, you guys talked about it on the field. They've been the worst team in football over the last 8 years or so. And the only thing worse than their on-field play has probably been like the toxic culture around them. So I'm kind of okay with a guy who's going to instill a totally different culture than the one that was there before. And the thing is, I think you have to know your team. And so look at the leaders on this team: Jones, Saquon, Zeitler, Sterling Shepard. Like, these don't strike me as the kind of guys who are going to fight him on this kind of behavior. And if the faces of your team fall in line, I think, I don't know, I kind of believe that the rest will follow. And these methods that we look at right now as being so bizarre, if he wins doing it this way, this kind of rhetoric from him, like right now you're making fun of it. A year from now, Giants fans will have this rhetoric on T-shirts in a year.
You're right, but it's just such an if, dude.
If he wins a year from now, 10 new coaches will be doing it. You know, that's what will happen. But let's see. Let's see what happens, because I've seen this go both ways. And I don't think he's trying to be Belichick. But as I said yesterday, when you're a new head coach and you have 25 new decisions that you have to make an hour that you never had to deal with before, and you actually get to the coaching point, you go back to what you know. And what he knows is Belichick and Saban.
And by the way, he is decidedly not trying to be Belichick. That soundbite you just played. Would Bill Belichick ever make a joke about putting bars of soap in socks and beating Tom Brady with it? Like, this guy clearly does have a personality that he's willing to show that Bill Belichick was never willing to show. So if Judge is showing that with the media, I imagine his players are seeing the same side of him. So he can, I feel like we have this idea of him that he's a football robot, that he's making his players run, that he has no personality, that he's Belichick light without the rings. And I think we're already seeing that's not necessarily true. And just because, you know, his mentality is different than what we saw with Rex, or he's a little more hard-nosed than what we saw with like a Todd Bowles, who was quiet and reserved, it doesn't mean that these methods are wrong.
It doesn't mean that they're wrong. It's just he's taking gigantic risks. Trotting out your quarterback to take any sort of contact during preseason is a gigantic risk.
Well, like I said, every coach around the league does it every year, and we don't say anything about it when they all play in preseason. And well, by the way, that's in uncontrolled environments against other teams that don't care at all about Daniel Jones or who your quarterback is.
The one guy who did it when he shouldn't have done it, we buried, and it was Rex, for when he did it with Sanchez and brought him back in the game.
A bit of a different situation. He brought him in the second half, playing behind a second and third string offensive line for the Jets. Right. I imagine Daniel Jones will not be doing that.
I would agree with that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of the Jets, by the way, meanwhile, at Jets camp, kind of a weird day for Adam Gase and Le'Veon Bell, a relationship that is already kind of under the microscope. I'm just going to read here from Rich Cimini's article, and you guys stop me whenever you want. He says, New York Jets running back Le'Veon Bell added a touch of drama to a routine scrimmage Wednesday, using social media to question why he spent the latter half on the sideline. Afterward, Coach Adam Gase told reporters that Bell was removed as a precaution because of hamstring tightness. The Jets have experienced several soft tissue injuries in training camp, and Gase said he didn't want to take any chances with Bell. Bell took issue with Gase's reasoning. Minutes after Gase's Zoom call, Bell retweeted an injury update from the Jets in-house internet reporter, adding, quote, ain't nothing wrong with my hamstrings. And then in follow-up tweets, Bell said, it's tough to stay loose when you do a bunch of standing around. And then he responded to a fan stressing the importance of practice for his performance during the regular season, saying, it's tough to stay loose when you do a bunch of standing around, and I'm used to going. So for whatever it's worth, I don't know if there was no hamstring issue and the Jets were just saying that unnecessarily. I don't know why they would do that. Clearly, there's some disconnect here between Bell and Gase. Whether or not it turns to be a big deal remains to be seen.
You know, this is all on Gase, okay? This is a guy that is arguably your number one offensive weapon. And you have to find ways to get him the ball and to get him the ball in open space and be creative with him. And you have to find ways to make sure you can maximize everything about him. He is your best chance to win this year. And he has clearly come back in unbelievable shape after what was a down year. If you're Adam Gase, don't screw around here. Maybe the guy wants, if you're protecting him from himself, that's fine. But, you know, just be careful what you're saying on that front.
This is not good. This is not what you want. Joe Girardi style.
It's not what you want to see.
It's just really, everyone's been trying to give Gase the benefit of the doubt in this relationship. And when I spoke to Bell this summer, he was pretty protective of Gase. Like, no, we're good. I wasn't at my best. He said everything you would want someone to say. Wouldn't you agree, Andrew? Everything.
Yeah, and 100%.
And then to turn around and he's not getting reps in practice and the coach says he has an injury that he doesn't have, this is not a good start for that relationship.
Yeah, so I would say, like, the Gase-Bell relationship, like, we're not quite at Michael Scott threat level midnight here just yet, but I feel...
Great movie.
But I feel like...
Clean up in aisle 7.
But, like, Le'Veon Bell has been so patient, and you can tell at times, like, I feel like he's been kind of, like, biting his tongue and making sure to say the right things when inside he probably has been frustrated. I feel like at some point there's like a ticking time bomb nature to this. And I just wonder if, you know, remember the Jets signed Frank Gore for a reason. He's going to play. They drafted LaMichael Pirine fairly high in this draft, like as another running back. He's going to play. So, you know, these days of Le'Veon Bell expecting 20 plus carries, it's doesn't seem realistic here. And I just wonder if at some point he's going to unload.
I'm trying to think of where Le'Veon Bell is going to get traded for a fourth round pick by week 7.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly.
Where does he end up? I'm going to go and say San Francisco.
Interesting. They do run the ball very effectively.
Yeah, Raheem Mostert gets a little banged up. Who knows?
All right. And then let's see two other quick stories here. Another playoff coach in the NBA has lost his job. Nate McMillan is out after getting swept by the Heat for the Pacers. He had 183 and 136 record with Indiana, but just 3-16 in the postseason. And that is probably why this decision occurred today.
Yeah.
That's
not what you want to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That winning percentage wouldn't strike me as good.
No, certainly not. They reportedly, well, there's some thought out there with Mike D'Antoni in the final year of his contract at Houston. It remains to be seen what will happen with him, depending on when the Rockets go out in this postseason, and he could be one of the leading candidates for that job. So we'll see once we get to that. And then
I'll give you a quick prediction. Sorry to interrupt, Andrew. You sound annoyed by that. Jeff Van Gundy will either be the coach of the Houston Rockets or the coach of the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, I have a hot take back. I have a hot take. Jeff Van Gundy will never coach in the NBA again.
Hot take.
And here's another hot take. The only people waiting for Jeff Van Gundy to coach again are people in the media who like Jeff Van Gundy. Wow. Myself included. But we seem to have this conversation every opening, and there's never a sniff. So
right, this has now become like if I were to tell you that the next NFL coaching vacancy, I think it's going to go to Bill Cowher.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, remember when that used to happen for years, and then eventually people gave up on Cowher, but it was years.
He's not going to coach again, right?
No, by the way, I'll give you another equivalent. A quarterback gets injured, Peter Rosenberg on Monday. When's Colin Kaepernick getting a job? It's not going to happen. Right? Like, that's me and Cap. It's reasonable that I think it, just like it's reasonable that Michael always thinks Van Gundy should get a call. But for some reason, we seem to think it's possible. No indication is that it's possible.
Just
sorry to take a big...
Slice it up and save it, RJ. Thank you.
Yep, sorry.
Slice it up and save it.
Tremendous hot take. I'll be curious to watch it as it plays out or
as it doesn't happen.
Doesn't play out.
Exactly.
And then finally here, what an unbelievably eventful offseason it has been for the Washington football team.
Hail to the no names.
Reading
hail
now from
to
ESPN.com.
Our team. Yeah.
A former Washington football team executive instructed employees to create a behind the scenes video for owner Daniel Snyder featuring clips of partially nude team cheerleaders pulled from a 2008 swimsuit calendar shoot, the Washington Post is reporting. Goes on here to say Brad Baker, who previously worked for former senior vice president and lead broadcaster Larry Michael, told the Post in an interview that Michael told members of his staff to make the video for Snyder. Michael denied the allegations when reached by the Post. Larry said something to the effect of, "We have a special project that we need to get done for the owner today. He needs us to get the good bits of the behind-the-scenes video from the cheerleader shoot onto a DVD for him," Baker told the Post. Snyder issued a statement Wednesday afternoon saying he was unaware of the allegations in the Post story and denied any knowledge of, quote, 10-year-old videos.
Yeah, this is, well,
not what you want.
No. And I wouldn't say that I know Larry Michael. I certainly have met with him and dealt with him a couple of times many, many years ago. To say that I would be surprised by any of this, would be lying.
I do know Larry Michael, first of all.
Hey, buddy.
And second of all, how dare you? No, I hear what you're saying.
You know what he's good at? Getting right up close to the owner or the guy in charge.
Well, he was until, of course, he resigned right when the first Washington Post story comes out. So here's why it's tough to think there's nothing here. When the first Post story came out, Larry Michael resigned right before the story dropped. When that story came out, there was almost nothing about Larry Michael. They mentioned him, but there was really nothing super damning in there. Now this story comes out, and you're telling me it's coincidence that he resigned at, I think, 58 or 59 or 60 years old as the voice of the team out of the blue?
No chance.
Plus, no chance.
The Washington Post has the DVDs of the video. They have it. And then Snyder puts out a statement today, which is, you know, the first half of it is, I've been too hands-off as an owner, apparently not, and, you know, others, day-to-day control, all that kind of stuff, I need to be more involved, and then goes into, the Washington Post article reads like a hit job, relying on unnamed sources and allegations that are largely 10 to 20 years old. We attempted to engage the Post to provide them with the facts. Like, he went on and on and on. Hammering one of the women, Ms. Scourby, one of the cheerleaders, and just absolute and denies any knowledge of the videos whatsoever.
Yeah,
and the NFL just within the last few moments came out with a statement and said, we're investigating the whole thing and we condemn the alleged behavior.
I really, really hope this is the end for Snyder.
I don't know how it couldn't be. How do you possibly,
if it turns out to be true, here, okay, let me ask you one question. I know we got to wrap, but if it turns out to be true and they investigate and think it's credible, do you think that's enough grounds that they could get him out of the NFL and that the other owners would actually step up to do so?
Yes, absolutely.
100% yes. Absolutely.
They'd have a major problem on their hands if they didn't, and they would absolutely go right after it, and it would be Donald Sterling-esque.
Yes,
because they, when the first Post story came out, it was really all the quotes were coming from only one woman who wanted to be identified. And guess what? When I'm looking at the Washington Post story right now, there are five photographed women who are proudly, openly telling their story. So this story is changing in front of us right now.
I've talked to women who are in and around that place, and all can say the same thing. Everybody knew, don't go up this staircase, don't do this, don't do that, don't, that guy's a creep, all right. This stuff.
All God, this. What an incredibly toxic environment around that franchise under this owner. That is ENN for tonight. Thank you to our co-host for this ENN, also Joe Girardi, who made several key appearances.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah. That is what you want.
It's not what you want to see.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.